right now, we've got Chris Hand and Selena Isles with a very special guest. I don't know who's going to do the introduction. I will throw it to Chris Isles.
Chris Isles, something like that. I was like, who? Well, okay, listeners. So today on the Friday Morning After, I'm joined in studio, and you guys are in for a treat because I get to do an interview, tag team interview, with the immortal Chris Zeke Hand, and I'm getting headphones to the side here. But our guest today is Tim Taylor, who finished his MA in media studies at Concordia and has released a book, and he's currently, well, we'll talk about where you are right now. But Tim, thanks for coming down early in the morning.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so without getting right into it, I'm going to pass the mic over to...
First off, since I can only see the book, but nobody else can, what's the title of the book and what's it about?
Okay, it's... excuse me. It's called The Legacy of Punk and Hip-Hop, 1979 to 1985, Vectors in the New York Underground. It's a modest size piece of literature, and it focuses on the crossover of hip hop and punk, particularly zeroing in on the period 79 to 85. However, looking at a more expansive run from 74 to say roughly 1988 of the entire scenes of both hip hop and punk, and how at one point in time there was a brief historical moment where they came together and they converged in New York City.
Okay, if you can sort of expand on that, because there it's my sort of minimal knowledge of the stuff. When you say like a convergence of hip hop and punk, the first thing that comes to mind is stuff like the Bad Brains and Rage Against the Machine, although the Bad Brains are much more reggae than hip hop and stuff like that, and Rage Against the Machine really, no matter how hard they try, really aren't hip hop either. But yeah, there's not much where it immediately jumps out and says, oh, I get it. And so obviously there's a lot more nuanced stuff within there.
Right. I'm talking about a lot in the book at the ideological level. What was going on? I don't get into a political economy because it's based in cultural studies, and there's no way of actually substantiating or making empirical ties to exactly what was going on, during the Reagan government administration or Carter, and how people were affected during that period. But what I do is I try to paint a picture, and so what the book hopefully does is succeeds in painting a picture of how using the tools that hip hop and punk have, which are art and specifically music, but not just music, graffiti, visual arts, coming together through collectives, through doing collaborative shows, multimedia. They've converged in a way that aligns them and puts them at a certain common arena where they converged.
Okay, do you have any specific examples? Because I can understand having, unfortunately or fortunately, as the case might be, having lived through both of them and so on. It is where I'm sort of still trying to wrap my head around, because at the time, it was a sort of thing, to the way that I saw it, was while there were similarities, there was a large divide, and there was not an awful lot of crossover from my memory of seeing it. It might be because I was not part of the punk scene, nor was I part of the hip hop scene, and so at which point I might have just had the blinders on and missed it all. But do you have any specific examples that can hang a hat on?
Yep, in 1981 at the Bonds Casino in New York. That was an example where the Clash were released Sandinista, and they were doing a show. They're headlining a show, and they had Grandmaster Flash and the Treacherous Three, and I think I'm missing one other, but that's one instance where physically they were sharing the same environment and doing shows together. And other instances, the Times Square show, which was sponsored by Colab and Art Collective at the time. Fab Five Freddy was there, and that was where he met Charlie Ahern, who is very much into punk as opposed to getting into hip hop. But it was at that point where there was a conjuncture there where they actually discussed making the film Wild Style, which is also another example in and of itself of how the two scenes began to collaborate together. Chris Stein from Blondie did the soundtrack and was involved in doing a lot of the making up some of the break beats for the soundtrack to Wild Style. So there's another example. Johnny Rotten and African Bambaataa, they collaborated.
Yeah, I forgot about that
one. Yeah. they collaborated as a group called Time Zone, and they did a song called World Destruction.
Six parts. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
It still is wonderful.
Yeah.
Should play that.
Malcolm McLaren, who always had his radar up for whatever is the thing, was right up in there. A long time in New York, first starting at trying to manage the New York Dolls, and when that failed, and when hip-hop exploded in 79, he got on board in the early 80s. Met Afrika Bambaataa, Zulu Nation party, and he was really turned on to the idea of hip-hop, and
there with Malcolm McLaren, it's, my view on that would be he sort of went from one camp to another camp to another camp, and he never really was combining stuff. It's when he was doing the Dolls, he was doing the Dolls. When he was doing the Sex Pistols, he was doing the Sex Pistols. When he was doing his, no, it wasn't Double Dutch because that was Frankie Bones, but the Double Dutch stuff that he did, Buffalo Girls.
Yeah,
yeah.
That to me is he was completely in the hip hop camp. He wasn't bringing any of there was no sort of combination of stuff there.
I think Malcolm McLaren brings Malcolm McLaren wherever he goes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think he's inextricably tied to punk rock and that the whole scene via the Sex Pistols, mm-hmm. and Vivian Westwood. And I think he still brought his punk rock, exploitative ethos,
yes.
to hip hop, and mm-hmm. he certainly did exploit hip hop as well, producing and being a part of the world famous Supreme Team.
Mm-hmm.
He started as DJs in New York, and he ended up producing an album with them. Buffalo Gals was the hit single, so I still view that as a type of crossover as well.
And then
Blondie, of course, mm-hmm. Rapture. We all mm-hmm. know there's this rapping and that.
Yeah. No, there it's like I can see with Malcolm McLaren, they're sort of him sort of jumping from one camp to another.
Mm-hmm.
And with the other ones, I can definitely see sort of a combining. Yet to me, it's where that combining of stuff that becomes sort of, to me, interesting, because one of my favorite concerts ever was seeing the Bad Brains, which isn't, as I said earlier, exactly hip-hop, but it was just where they would go on the drop of a dime from this absolutely wonderful dub stuff to absolute thrash. And I can remember taking my, I don't know, she must have been probably about 14 years old at the time, my 14-year-old sister, to go see them down in New York. And my head was exploding from it, just because it was the first time I ever saw somebody stage dive from the balcony. And I was saying, oh, this is really head-twisting, mind-warping. I have never seen anything like it. And it opened my eyes to all sorts of stuff. And so when you do get that combining of stuff together, it is absolutely wonderful and amazing. What caused you, how did you end up deciding on this? Because judging from the way you dressed, I wouldn't imagine that you were dealing with hip-hop or punk.
Yeah, it's quite true. I think it's what's on the inside, though. I'm also dressed to go to work as well.
You're doing the 9-to-5. Speaking of 9-to-5, I just want to jump in and ask a question. Your TLPH, which is the acronym, I believe, for the Legacy of Punk and Hip-Hop.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, thank you. Right bang on it this morning. Subtitle is Vectors in the New York Underground. And, Vectors, I have my own impressions. Underground being a kind of Afro-punk hip-hopper. It's really distinct from calling it your book A History of Punk and Hip-Hop circa 1979 to 1984. Is there a distinction between the two titles? Is there a reason why you added that Vectors in the New York Underground? Or is that like a defining, like, okay, this is what it's about?
The reason I added, and to answer...
Selena rules. Go for her first.
Okay. The reason I added, aside from the fact that I had to add a subtitle,
okay,
it was a mandate. The third chapter, especially, is where mm-hmm. I bring in the idea or borrow the idea of vectors.
Okay.
So it's kind of a theoretical tool, but it helps to, again, paint the picture of what was going on in New York in terms of really basing it in a geography.
Okay.
And how through the movements through the spaces of New York, being that New York is renowned for its geographical uniqueness.
Spaces like Brooklyn,
and the five
Bronx.
Boroughs.
Okay, the five boroughs, right. Nice.
Yeah. So what I talk about in the third chapter is basically how through these movements, they you can view them as vectors as well, and so you can look at certain movements from between uptown and downtown, from the Bronx to the downtown art scene, as a kind of vector, and those movements represent certain the actors that are doing the movements. If we can
okay, I understand.
Okay, I'm kind of diverging here. So
no, I can see where you're coming from, because it was leading to my question, which is a double barrel for you and Zeke. Okay. Have you moved through those vectors, Zeke? Because you said you kind of went through both time.
I assume I might have, just because I was around at that time and I was breathing. However, as with everything, I sort of have these blinders on that sort of prevent me or enable me to just sort of sleepwalk through everything and then say, "Wow, cool, that happened. I was there. Wow."
I think it's probably in hindsight. It's not like you're like theorizing your real life, as you're living it. I don't think you're actually, kind of thinking about
I'm certain there's some people out there who do that, but yeah, you're right. It is where it's sort of say, okay, I got to eat, I have to drink, I have to go to the bathroom, and at which point this theory stuff, you save it for a little bit later.
Yeah, so that would be really premeditated and kind of odd. So I'm not going to theorize about how I'm going to be leaving out the door into the cold weather. So,
although it occurred to me now in thinking about it, do you, what is his name? Jean Bouvier, I think, it was the bass player for Wendy O. Williams, where he is, to me, the...
Asking the wrong guy.
Okay, there it's, if I remember correctly, and I might he was basically, as far as I can tell, Wendy O. Williams was from Cleveland. She was this ex-stripper who then got on the punk bandwagon. Her big thing was that because she was an ex-stripper and there were all these 17-year-old kid guys in the audience and stuff like that, it was ooh, and she would have electric tape over her nipples so that she could actually play on stage and everybody would get all excited.
Was she a one-woman band? Or who?
She had a band, but it's...
She was based
out of Cleveland, if I remember correctly, someplace, Midwest, maybe Chicago. But then one of the other things was she had this, 6'5" black guy with a mohawk that was all white, that added another foot and a half to his height. And so he was the most intimidating thing in the world. And from my understanding was he actually had come from whatever hip hop scene in Cleveland there was.
Chris, that's an incredible image to leave on. We just got to run a couple ads. We're going to come right back with the second half of the interview with Tim Taylor.
I have to remember a big dude with mohawk.
Supper time?
CKUT would like to thank the following restaurants and stores for their food donations to our 21st annual funding drive. Fuchsia Bakery, Burritoville, Cafe Tradici, Oviv, Dad's, Alto's, Pita Pit, Villa España, home of authentic Spanish food and ambiance, Piano Restaurant, Casa del Pueblo, Le Frigo Vert, Sandwich Volant, Spicy Island Restaurant, St. Viateur Bagel, and Hotspot for their delicious homemade ginger beer. For more info on any of these restaurants, visit ckut.ca.
Supper time!
Called in to pledge during CKUT's funding drive. CKUT is located at 3647 University, just below Pine Avenue. Our offices are open weekdays between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. We will also be open Saturday, December 6th, and Sunday, December 7th, between noon and 5 p.m. for a disco-rama. Come down, pay your pledge, get a tour, and pick up your gift. You can still make your pledge by calling 514-907-9424 or going to ckut.ca.
Intimate Sky, Chapter 10, Reunion of the Self. A special night of trios, featuring a selection of Montreal's most brilliant artists. wisdom, song, poetry. December 5th, 8 p.m. at The Mine. 3680 Jean Mons, a CKUT co-presentation.
Welcome back to the Friday Morning After. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. Selena Isles and Chris Hand have a fascinating guest today talking about the ability of hip-hop and punk to fuse together to perform one, some of the examples of that happening in the past. And where we left off was Chris Hand telling us about a 6'5" black guy.
With a white mohawk.
It's actually Wendell Williams' bass player. We found out during the break that Wendell Williams, the band she was in, was the Plasmatics. And thank you very much, Craig, for saving my butt on that one.
Craig's actually searching for that for us right now, so we might have some Plasmatics as outro music.
that definitely wake you up if he finds it. But yeah, no, originally my question was, how did you come up with the idea for this book? And where did it sort of come from?
I was ordained to write the book because I was born the year punk in the UK broke in 1976. And so a little birdie flew on my shoulder one day and told me that I should write it. I practiced that answer. I knew it was going to be a question.
Although that gets the first side. How'd you add it with the hip-hop? I wasn't born in Britain in 1976.
Just because I ended up listening to hip-hop when I was coming up. I guess because they probably looked like me on TV. Okay. I thought, I came from a pretty small town, southwestern Ontario. And it was very interesting growing up in that kind of situation where you stick out. You know, you're one of the only families there. You can count on your fingers the number of people in your high school, that are a visible minority. And so, from an early age, I guess I became quite self-conscious of that. Mm-hmm. And I had to deal with that somehow. And there's a lot of negotiating there of different identities. And so there is, on one side, listening to some of the music that my sister is listening to, Psychedelic Furs and, all these like new wave 80s bands. And, I think that she probably had some influence in getting me into punk and then hip hop. It was just there. So, I think one of my first albums was Public Enemy. I ordered it. Mm-hmm. I think you could order it from like a, you know how you could order CDs? Like, what was it?
Columbia House.
Yeah.
And The Clash. And so I had, I had both of them among some other albums I don't want to talk about. We all have those skeletons in our closet.
There's some that I just saw Grease for the first time, and at which point I'm like,
I can't believe I
you
did
just
that.
Saw, you saw just what?
The movie Grease. From that era and stuff like that. Yeah, so for the first time ever, and I said,
You mentioned that you're from a small town in Ontario, and I wanted to ask you a question. You've now put out this book, and being from small town Ontario, which if I understand is in proximity to Detroit, like you guys are like, you can spit at Detroit from where you are, right?
Yeah.
You think, has that influenced you at all? And are you now a role model to because I'm probably sure there's a lot of cats that cross over a lot. I was one of those kids that crossed over a lot and got into a lot of flack from it coming from where I come from. So do you find yourself a role model for these kids now? You've come out, you live in Montreal, a cool city. You've written a book. You're in
band. I don't know.
I don't know.
I guess I could be if people knew who I was, but people know who I am.
That's why you're here, Tim.
Yeah. I'm on a crusade to become an academic pop star.
Okay.
that's a good crusade to be on.
I like the academic pop star. Now, there's something else really cool that you are affiliated with and that you actually introduced me to, which was Afropunk.
Yeah.
And I know that they might be picking up your book or something like that, website.
Yeah, that would be really nice. If anything, just because in the conclusion...
You have to explain who or what Afropunk is, because I might know, but everyone's
I'm clueless.
There's a group of, like a community, and it kind of sprung out of a documentary by a guy named James Spooner. Called Afropunk, and the documentary is about black punks, basically, in America. Mm-hmm. And so around that is an entire kind of online community. And I think that, and I don't know, I haven't gone, I don't really know a lot of people that, I don't know anybody in the community there. I live in Montreal. Yes. So, but it's something that interested me when I watched the documentary. And, you know, there's definitely a strong online community that can tell. And I think there's probably a real community there in New York from what I see in all the events going on. And it really ended up, at the end of the book, I realized that there is one possible other moment in time where something quite unique occurred again using the same music that hip hop and punk to kind of break outside of you know, a dominant discourse on race, you know, the definitions of race, mm-hmm. basically. And so Afropunk, I thought, was very unique in that sense, and in a way could be likened to a really special moment back in 79 to 85, where there was a lot of there was a need, I guess, to kind of move outside, think outside of the box. And so I thought that that's what they were doing there. So.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. Mm-hmm.
Although there, when you're talking about Afropunk and stuff like that, I'm also, because part of the whole idea to me within punk is not so much the music, where I find, especially now today, people who sort of invoke the term punk, to me it's almost like sort of using sort of Gucci handbags as sort of like an accessory.
Absolutely.
It is, there is definitely a whole ethos behind it and a whole way of thinking which doesn't necessarily lead to or require the music to go along. It suddenly made me realize, oh yeah, it's like, what are they doing in Nairobi? What are they doing in Johannesburg? I'm certain that there is some sort of punk ideas, concepts, music that is coming out of there that may not necessarily just be thrash.
Yeah.
True. This is a really good punk band, and they follow the same ideologies as old school punkers, just for your information. It's coming out of South Africa, and I'll give you guys the name of them as I go through my notes after that, just to answer that question. Okay. But there is a punk scene in other places. And we have, I believe, right now about a minute left. Any last questions, closing questions?
I'm fascinated in stuff like that. I know that last night I was trying to read through it as quickly as possible. However, it's very dense, and it is full of multisyllabic words. And so it was a slightly tough slog. I was making it through the first chapter. I will be picking up the second and third chapters now without a lot of pressure on me, so as to figure out what exactly is what. Is there a follow-up? What are you doing next? You had mentioned stuff, and at which point?
I would really like to, if I'm lucky enough to be able to have a second edition, add pictures and go through and archives it's kind of complement the literature there. There's a lot of primary research that I would have liked to have done, and maybe I can go and do that, in New York and check out a lot of the zines. Mm-hmm. Get a hold of some more the punk magazines and Rat Pages and stuff like that, and old issues of Billboard. But I would like to work on it more, you know, if there's more interest there. So
very cool.
Yeah. Cool. Good luck.
Thanks a lot,
Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. You guys have been amazing. For
Tim,
more information,
thanks a lot for joining us.
You can
amazing.
Find
thanks,
him.
Guys.
Oh, we're both talking. Sorry, Tariq. I'm gonna stop. Okay, you can find Tim.
Don't be shy, Selena. Go ahead. Tell them where they can find out more about Tim.
You can find him on www.27s.net. You can pick up his book, The Legacy of Punk and Hip Hop, 1979 to 1985, Vectors in the New York Underground, by Timothy Taylor. You can also, he is currently working as a communications guru at Group Technica in Montreal. Thank you very much for joining us down here this morning.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. We'll be right back after this with more Friday Morning